Broadcasted live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
We've all been watching what's happening in the Northwest in that community of Stilfontein. South African Human Rights Commission officials visited the mine in the Northwest on Thursday as well as on Friday and spoke to community leaders and the police as well. On the line with us is Philile Ntuli, who's a commissioner at the South African Human Rights Commission. Thank you very much, Commissioner, for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela. Good evening to your listeners. Thank you so much for inviting us to your show this evening.
Thank you. Well, what did you find when you visited the site on Thursday and Friday?
Perhaps before we move to the findings, let me start by confirming that indeed and based on a complaint that we have received as the South African Human Rights Commission from a member of the public, we are currently investigating allegations that the state has failed, refused, and or neglected to undertake measures to rescue the miners. The complaint also includes allegations that the state has refused or deprived the miners of water and food. We can also confirm, as you have indicated, Pamela, that on the 14th and the 15th of November, we visited Stilfontein and engaged members of the community, staffs, and even someone who has been underground. And based on our engagements, we can confirm to you and your listeners that this is quite a complex matter which contains multiple truths. And these truths do sometimes compete with each other and can be in conflict with each other depending on which side of the narrative or which side of the conversation you sit on.
And maybe just unpack that a little bit, you know, the many different truths that may also seem contradictory to one another.
Yes, sure. So, for example, there is a narrative or discourse across the nation which suggests that the miners are trapped. And one views the miners as trapped depending on which side of the conversation they are sitting on. While some believe that the miners are trapped, there are those who do not believe that the miners are trapped, particularly those who sit on the side of the state. And even some on the side of the community. The state has made it very clear that they are not preventing the miners from coming out. In fact, they are encouraging the miners to come out. So this is an example of contesting truth in the narrative. There are also those who could suggest that the miners are being deprived of food and water, and others may believe that this is not the truth.
So, I mean, how much, and I know this is still early days, how much of that truth have you found to be real truth?
You are quite right. It's still early days in our investigation. However, what we can confirm to you, Pamela, is that we do, as the South African Human Rights Commission, have serious concerns at multiple levels. In the immediate, our main concern is based on the sacrosanct right to life. And we are asking the question of whether there are circumstances currently that are at play which compromise the right to life of those who are underground. And when we say underground, we must emphasize that this is a shaft that is 1.8 meters underground and it has multiple levels. There has been multiple different reports about how many miners are underground. Some people say it's 500, some say it's 6,000. So we don't know how many people are underground, and we also don't know how many of those have their lives compromised. We are also immediately concerned about the right to food and water, and we are asking a question of whether anyone has been prevented from accessing their right to food. We are subjecting these questions, Pamela, to an investigation which is currently underway and which has been sparked, one, by the complaint we have received, but also, two, by our own observation as the Human Rights Commission based on our monitoring activities.
You know, also language is very interesting because I suppose, yes, there's the element of investigating truth, but there's also the issue of language, you know, about what do you mean deprive? Is it that you are not, because if you deprive, it means that you stop me either from accessing the food, or one can argue, you have the responsibility to give me food if you are at the proximity of food and I'm not at the proximity of food, because your primary concern as government is to make sure that you uphold my rights to life. So all of that is quite complex. Currently, where does the state sit? And I know your job was not necessarily to go and mediate, but how have you left the situation upon your visit?
Where we are in terms of our understanding on the state, and perhaps before I go there, I must agree with you, it is a matter of language, and depending on which side of the spectrum you sit in. So does the state have an obligation to continue to provide food to the miners? And this is a conversation that is ongoing. We are receiving reports that are unverified that indicate or suggest that there may also be hierarchies of power underneath. And by hierarchies of power underneath, these suggest that when food is delivered to the shaft, there are those who are more powerful
and make decisions,
who make the decisions about the distribution of that food, and in some instances even sell that food. So then the question must be, to what extent must the state keep on distributing the food without understanding the circumstances underground? So you are quite correct, Tumelo. Now, please go ahead.
I suppose it's also similar to the decisions, as you said, that are made underneath there. For example, something as simple as who gets to be given the chance to survive. So if there's one rope, as we are told, one rope, and only one person can come up at a time, when so many, let's say, are desperate. And we don't know, as you said, we don't know whether people want to come out or maybe not want to come out. We don't know that. But if, let's say, there are five people who have volunteered to come up, maybe it's not as easy as, you know, come up. It maybe is about hierarchy and someone making a decision, we will decide this is the person coming up or a body must come up.
Absolutely. And as you know, in society, we are governed, our lived experience is governed by power relations, whether we are above ground on the surface and underneath. So we can understand that these power relations do govern the ways in which life is experienced underneath that shaft. So when it comes to the question of there's a rope being thrown, and the rope is being thrown every 2 hours, and you have miners who are, some are desperate to come out, some may not want to come out, we don't know the situation, but who has the right to make the decision, or who is making the decision, and on what basis are they making the decision? We do not know. What we do know, Camilo, is that there are miners who are underground, who have been there for more than 5 years and have never seen the light. One gentleman who came out, who is from Mabopane, we understand, who came out last week, Tuesday, said that he had gone down there in 2021. And it was his first time coming out. Now, Camilo, he's coming out without any minerals, without any gold. He's coming out as he had arrived. Well, we assume he arrived with nothing. He has been there for about 5 years. He hasn't seen his family. He hasn't seen the light of day. And he's coming out with nothing. And he tells the narrative of how life is down there. And he says that sometimes when you find minerals, you have to barter those minerals for amenities like food and water because they are so rare. So a loaf of bread is 100 rand.
I believe so, I believe so.
Yes. So life is extremely expensive. but they are also highly exploitative relationships that are going on underground that those of us who are on the surface have not even begun to imagine. And so there's a serious question that we as South Africans have to ask about the conditions that have brought
people there,
bodies there. And it's a very lazy way to have the conversation that just criminalizes, that says these are criminals or these are illegal minors. There's a much more nuanced conversation that we need to have, and it's a conversation of history. It's a conversation that says what conditions create a situation where men, black bodies, have to find themselves for 5 years underneath, desperate for minerals. And outside, next to the shaft, is a community. And the community leaders say that 1 in 10 people in this community have a job. So what do people do?
Because the complexity is so layered, even from the perspective of those who add their voices to this conversation. Because here's one of the facts. One of the facts is that media, people like myself, people like yourself, don't live in that community. So we have a perspective, but we're not even close to understanding the nuance even there. Because I find it absolutely interesting that in the community, you have those who are pleading with government to assist the miners. I find that very interesting. And yet, when we sometimes tell the story of the community of a place where, there has been illegal mining happening, you also tell a story of people who are sick and tired of, illegal activities and the terror and the guns. We've been speaking to miners off air who don't want to come on air, who are terrified, who are saying, no, we can't speak because we will be targeted. Someone said, in fact, the other day, I have children. They will kill me if they heard me speak on the radio, because the people who are getting the airtime are South African miners. They are miners that are ruthless, that are sitting there, that are not going to speak to the media, that are foreign, and we will never hear their story because the stakes are much higher for them. So it's quite complex in that sense.
Absolutely. You are absolutely right, Camilla. It is a highly complex, multi-layered, and we haven't even begun to scratch the surface, because we are having the conversation from a removed place, and we are watching and looking into communities from an analytical perspective and not from a lived experience. So all that we have are just the very limited analytical tools that we have, and the story is quite complex from those who are living it from a first-hand perspective. You are quite right. The community that lives next to the shaft is highly supportive. But one of the things that has struck us while we were there is to see that these are young boys.
Yes, I was also struck by that. I really was very struck by that.
Young boys who should ordinarily be in school, and they are having to save their brothers, having to save their uncles, and living this condemned life of disparity and desperation.
No, I mean, to be honest with you, the one thing that struck me was the age of the people coming out. And look, of course, maybe the older guys are underneath. You know, maybe it's not the full picture. But I really was struck by how young some of these miners are. I was totally taken aback by that.
Yeah, it's shocking and it's painful and it's agonizing, because these are tomorrow's elders. These are tomorrow's men. So when we experience multiple manifestations of violence in our society, we don't look at the multiple contributors, including the experience that these young boys are having to experience at this young life and what it does to them psychosocially. and how it conditions and prepares them for a life of desperation, disparity, and understanding that they form part of a community of condemned, and how they relate to the rest of society that is looking in as opposed to living this experience with them.
Wow. Commissioner Phulile Ntuli, thank you so much for your time. She's a commissioner at the Human Rights Commission. They went and investigated after a complaint by the community at Stilfontein, who said the miners have been denied food, the miners have been, not been allowed access to water and medication and so on, and they have not been rescued. So as she said, it's very, very complex. So Human Rights Commission went to investigate on the 14th and the 15th. It's an ongoing investigation. And so when I come back, I will be speaking to the MEC for Community Safety in the Northwest to give us an update.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.